Oh, my book.
It's, in fact, we might even decide that we should have somebody who talks us through the picture.
Like, do the video, the, what do I call it, the...
Commentary. Yeah.
Yeah, but they call it something...
So narration?
We got Sophie, also known as Stella, and her boyfriend, Joey Estrada.
Stella. We're up to book 5, right?
No. Huh?
We're on book 5.
Yeah, we're in book 5, number of chapter 1, which is chapter 26 of the series.
Well, we have a wonderful artist with us. She can walk us through this. That's right.
I can walk you through it, and I suppose that they're...
Okay, so let's see. I don't mind being Tom Strong's gorilla. The Weeping Gorilla, by the way, doesn't make an appearance in this issue.
I'll be Tom Strong.
You'll be Tom Strong? Okay, and I'm going to be Solomon. And
Sophie. Sophie slash Joey.
Okay, and then we need somebody to be the boyfriend, who I think is Joey Estrada, but I don't remember his
name. No, Joey is Sophie.
Oh, okay.
And what is his name? I can't remember his name.
All right, well, somebody could be the boyfriend. And then we've got Ball and Bruegel. The FBI agents.
Who was that last week? Who was last week? Paul and Bruegel.
I don't remember.
I think I did Paul and Bruegel last week.
You want to do them again?
Sure.
And we got Trish on the phone.
Mm-hmm. I can answer the phone, I guess.
We got Promethea. Promethea and Joey have a conversation.
Conversation.
Yeah.
And then there's also
Tom Strong's wife.
Yeah.
I can't remember what her name is.
Balua, I think.
Balua.
Yeah.
And then Telsa. Telsa's the robot,
Telsa.
I think.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. Does anybody want a slight synopsis of the Tom Strong story?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, it's another series done by Alan Moore. It was I read the first two or three issues, which give the background story. And basically, the background story is pretty much done in the first two issues. Tom Strong was his parents went to an island somewhere in the South Pacific. They raised him in an enhanced gravity chamber, so that he would be super strong, and they also created the robot Telsa to help build this island science paradise. Tom Strong grew up and has his wife. His daughter, I think, it might be his Telsa.
I think it's Tesla, though, like Nikola Tesla, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
I probably wrote it down here wrong. And maybe I inverted the letters. Okay, Tesla. They have ongoing things, and they move to Millennium City, which is, and some other part of the comic cosmos, which is why he's there. So of course, what happens is he's sort of like the science hero of this area, and that's why the Ball and Brew get in touch with him. And Tom Strong, of course, doesn't quite know how to deal with Promethea. He isn't quite taking the FBI at their word about this stuff. He's kind of independent-minded about that stuff. I think he's going to be in two or three or more episodes, and he doesn't. He's just sort of like a bow to it. Personally, the comic and the stories themselves are don't appeal to me. They might appeal to some people. So that's a little synopsis of the Tom Strong stories. So And I think Tom Stoyer, he may have had something to do with founding Millennium City. Now, Millennium City is in America, I believe, whereas the island that they're from is somewhere else.
Right. And it wasn't the island artificially created? Didn't they create that? I think it was. I think it was something.
Yeah, that I don't recall from reading it, but yeah. They did move there and with very advanced things about 1900. So he's very long lived, Tom Strong also. He sort of represents the superhero century of the 20th century. His parents being at the beginning of it. Alrighty, and I guess the next thing to do is to do the Thoth cards.
Okay. Pens and papers ready? Here we go.
Ready to roll.
Okay, first card, Six of Wands. Victory. Second card, Eight of Cups. Indolence. Third card, Seven of Discs. Failure.
Wow.
Fourth card.
Failure, yeah.
Fourth card, The Hermit.
You said the fourth card was The Hermit?
Yep. Fifth card, Princess of Wands. Sixth card, The Moon.
What was the sixth again?
Moon, The Moon.
Oh, Moon.
Seventh card, Four of Wands. Completion. Eighth card, Seven of Swords, Futility. Ninth card, The Emperor.
What was number one, Johanna?
Six of Wands, Victory.
Thank you. Well, we're kind of all over the place here.
So the second card is a water card, and that's another water position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Hermit is an, if you assign elements to the majors, is an earth card.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the earth position. Wow, future outcome, the moon. That to me is, personally, I find that the most interesting card of the whole spread in that position.
What was the eighth card again? It was the seventh of what?
Seven of Swords, Futility.
Futility.
What is the fifth card? The sixth card is the
hidden motivation. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, the fifth card is Princess of Wands.
So what's its position?
It's in the fifth position on the bottom.
Hidden motivation.
Uh-huh.
Motivation, all right.
You know, that arc of influence, taken as a whole, is very interesting because you have two rather powerful cards. I mean, the Four of Wands, completion, and then the Emperor, and then in between them is futility. It's like, so what?
Yeah.
You know, you're complete, you're powerful, but so what? You know, it's...
We have to see if that's the storyline, if that has anything reference.
Well, knowing that we're approaching the apocalypse here, an unwilling apocalypse bringers in some ways. I don't think Sophie exactly wants to bring on the apocalypse.
Well, obviously. obviously not. She's trying to avoid it. That's why she's hiding.
No, she's also trying to avoid being tossed into Ooscout, too.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know.
Those two cards in the Ark of the Influence, number 7 and 8, are compatible cards. They're wands and swords, according to Paul Barlow. Hughes Barlow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are compatible cards, and they support one another. And they're leading to the Emperor, so it looks like she's coming out of the thing okay.
Emperor. Leads
yeah,
to
right.
the Emperor, which may be our Tom Strong influence.
It could be.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, also, given the way that I read the Arc of Influence as representing the next chapter, the next chapter continues with Tom Strong and Sophie Promethea having a rather long discussion.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically what it's about at this point.
The Hermit, the Moon, and the Emperor. You know, the Hermit and the Moon, I don't know, have a certain tone.
Yeah, similar vibe.
Yeah. And the Emperor goes, you know, like a 360-degree. But it is the culminating card on the Arc of Influence.
Well, I feel like the Princess of Wands and the Emperor seem to be communicating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Through the Six of Wands, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, the other thing, too, is that you basically have here with the...
The end completion.
Once you stop victory, which is at the initial place, which seems a little strange. But when you get indolence and failure, the Eight of Cups and the Seven of Discs in those, and then going to the Hermit, you really do have, that's definitely Sophie on the Lamb.
Yeah. That's
you know,
true.
And it's kind of an interesting thing with the initial thing being the victory card.
I just see that as the next stage.
Yeah, it's sort of, yeah, it's in other words, the Six of Wands is, even though, you know, there's this is a kind of depressive feel to this issue. It's like the lull before a major creative spurt, you know. This is a time for incubation.
Yeah.
With the Hermit and the Moon, you get a lot of incubation kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That's the perfect word for what I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Incubation. Yeah.
If you look at the pictures in the storyline, she's kind of depressed. She's in that bookstore or record store, whatever she's in. She's come to a victory. I mean, the thing is that the first five chapters, the first five books, were moving up the Tree of Life and getting toward Keter, which would be a total victory. And now she's sitting in this damn bookstore.
Yeah, right. A little bit depressive, don't you think? How do you follow that?
And actually, the victory could be that, you know, that she sort of, that she won the judgment from last week.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah.
She also had this incredible experience. And now she's back.
Val has left the conference.
And I think she's taking some time for herself at this point. She's indolent. She's feeling failure, maybe, and she's pulling back as a hermit.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll process what she's been through.
Yeah.
Right.
Indolence is a very good word to describe her at the beginning of this chapter. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And you look at the word Promethea, it's all about me in this title.
Yeah.
ME is capitalized.
Oh, yeah, it is. I didn't even notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
Yep.
Promethea.
That's Val again.
Has arrived.
I wonder if,
Hopping.
You know, she almost has post-traumatic shock syndrome.
Yes.
But she suffered the loss of her lover.
Bipolar in the sense that you've been up there and then, splat, down.
Right.
Yeah, in some ways, the other thing is that she is looking at a... at a magazine in which Tom Strong is mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And there's, and, you know, she's at a DVD store. She's at a...
movie store. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get started here. I guess I'll... the radio.
The radio guy?
Okay.
Or girl?
Later, missiles attacks against Israel during the Gulf War. However, in 2003, a more hawkish Israeli parliament has stated it will respond to such attacks. This could say, and some say, precipitate Armageddon.
Armageddon.
In the Middle East. In other news, anti-globalization protesters marched in New York today against standalone U.S. refusal of cheap medicines to the third world. Despite some arrests, demonstrations passed relatively peacefully.
No, I'll take this. It's a sort of a joke for the Stagnite, you know?
Meanwhile, on local news, friends pay tribute today to Millennium City's diva, Quinta Deserlat, who passed away Friday, aged 78.
Uh-huh. That's $3.
Sure.
Artist Laszlo Kampfer praised Deserlat's timeless millennium voice, while Lula Strong spoke of her friend's remarkable courage.
Scene. This, we are looking into a store, M City Movies. Our heroine is leaving the store and going downstairs. Quietly, she approaches a bus. We see that she has entered the bus, sitting near an older woman, reading the Millennium Times. Voice of the Millennium dies, age 78. The city is quiet. People come and go, on and off the bus. Our heroine is now in an elevator with profanity written on the, scratched into the walls. She's walking through the streets. TV cameras in shops, rather, or TVs in shops have a look of a picture of a Wagnerian type of soprano singing. She approaches Appismart. The scenes are gloomy, quiet. She pays for some items and walks upstairs. The scenes are gray. This graffiti on the walls, level 50 ballroom boys rule. Close up, she knocks on the door, and she enters.
So do you see Tom Strong?
No, that's Joey's brother.
Boyfriend.
The boyfriend. Who's the boyfriend?
You, I thought.
I thought it was Tom Strong.
Oh,
I skipped a page.
I thought you were going to be the boyfriend.
Hey, sweetheart. Everything okay?
Oh, yeah. Stella relieved me a couple minutes early, so I caught the 9 o'clock sky bus. Hey, I got those Malaysian things you like.
Oh, fantastic. I'll put them on while you shower. Hey, you. You know what a big old babe like you, the singer? She died.
Yeah, I heard.
As fighting beginning in earnest, continuing row over depleted uranium shell casings.
Hey, this guy comes in today, rents this video, just as a joke, okay? For a stag party, jelly jewelry.
Ha, 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 ha. Coming up tonight with Brink Hinckley, Al-Qaeda's Savine technology.
Our couple makes love under the moonlit sky. helicopter passes by. We see that the helicopter is manned by FBI personnel. It is an FBI helicopter, and it's landing on a rooftop. Agents, FBI agents, are greeted and exit. We come across a gorilla.
Solomon.
And the gorilla seems to be beckoning them towards
Master
a place.
Tom, it's the federal fillies. Don't you know they've arrived?
Oh, yes. Agents Ball and Bruegel. How may I help you, ladies?
Mr. Strong, first of all, thank you for agreeing to see us at such short notice.
Frankly, agents, these anti-terrorism laws left me a little choice. You said this was about Promethea?
Strong, we know she's a terrorist. And in the 50s, you and a clandestine group together. Lucille, come on, back off.
Good fed, bad fed. That's new. You're talking about America's best.
Yes, we understand it was a science hero team.
We certainly weren't terrorists. What made you think that Promethea is? What made you think that Promethea is?
She's of Middle Eastern origin. 3 years ago, she blitzed Central New York.
That doesn't sound in any way like Promethea I know. Maybe you've alienated her, and now you've come here to alienate me? I have to say, agents, even this administration has better ideas.
Is that a threat? Lucille, shut up. Mr. Strong, I'm sorry. We've got off to a bad start. Let me try to explain. Different Promethea. There are several. This one has abducted children, and she plans to end the world.
Abducted children?
New York, 3 years ago, she sent a creature after some kids. They've not been seen since. We assume they're dead.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
Yes, but we know this Promethea's human identity. She's a young New York woman called Sophia Bangs. Yeah, and we think she's here in Millennium.
Visiting me? I haven't been in. I haven't seen Promethea in 40 years.
No, Banks has a mother in New York. The Bureau tapped her phone.
Did they know?
Look, the mother had lots of hang-up calls from Millennium phone booths. It has to be the daughter.
I see. She's here. You want me to find her for you? Is that pretty much it?
Yes, that's pretty much it.
Tom Strong looks out onto the city, pensively.
Okay.
Scene change. The city is bustling. People are exiting the bus, going upstairs to different shops and areas. Our heroine goes to a phone.
Hello?
Little quiet and concerned.
I love you.
She hangs up the phone and a white dove flies away. She's back at work another day at her very mundane job. She's servicing.
Another dork.
With another dork. Buying.
Another day, another dork, another DVD.
Yes, yeah. Another DVD. Oh, poor heroine. We feel for her. The once great Promethea seems to be lost in the mundane.
Oh, watch this. This is where Polly Walnut says about the interior decorator killing Czechoslovakians.
Yeah, that's something funny. I said, yeah, here we go, man.
Thanks. Michael Imperiali's freaking gorgeous.
Nah, that Doe's Peter's thing, that's just a myth.
Here, Joey, you want some of this? Yeah, sure.
Now, I tell you, she wants a man. She wants Chrissy Soprano and his Smashing elephant trunk.
Man, you're just jealous. Yeah, see, Trent knows you, you nosiest pig. Imperioli's like buds with Spike Lee and everything. Yeah, wasn't he in Summer of Sam? Totally, he was the porn director guy. Hey, did you tell Trent about that jelly jewelry video the store had?
Yeah, Trent already owns a copy.
I do not. Hey, is the news on? Man, I
don't want to watch the news.
Oh, I guess it is him. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Man, I don't want to watch the news. It's just going to be Bush and some more stuff about Iraq.
I guess. Man, I can't believe we elected that guy.
Well, we didn't elect him. That last election, I heard even the first American was president for an hour or so. I mean, how the shit is that?
That's pretty flipped up. He's that kind of joke science hero, right? Hangs with the blonde chick?
Right over in Washington or somewhere. I hear he was in a porn movie once.
Yeah, I think she was in Jelly Jewelry.
See? I knew you had a copy. There, take this.
Ah, man, I borrowed that off you, along with all that sick animal stuff I couldn't bring myself to watch. And Promethea has appeared.
Who's being Promethea?
I thought you were... Okay.
Sorry. Mr. Sophie, we would all soon wish to return and shoulder once again your fearsome tax.
You couldn't, but Trent, I thought your mom was really good in those, really showed her range, you know?
Mistress Bill asks that you watch the news more, and says to tell you this is not a drill.
Nah, seriously, man. You ought to be proud.
F you, man. Joey, you want this? What does that mean?
I know not. She also saith someone's going to catch it when Mom gets home.
You talking to me? What does that, what does it mean, what?
Actually, this is almost out. Mom? What, my mom? Listen, you tell them I'm finished with all that.
Joey, you okay, babe?
She's whining out, man. It's this kind bud, I'm telling you.
Well, what? Anna?
Oh, I guess that was... That was me, but that's
okay. Oh, okay. All right.
What? But Anna, she,
You're okay, sweetheart. Trent's right. You just overdid the Millennium Mall.
Say goodnight, Joey.
But come on. You should calm down we're done here.
We see our heroine, eyeglasses off, in bed, somewhat in shock, shivering, unknowing what was going to happen next. What is this? Is this a trip? Is this a dream? What is this? We see amoeba like iridescent creatures. Then we see a mad painted clown shooting his way and a glass half full or half empty. We don't know. She is so weary. But another day is dawning and back to the old grind. In the background, we see the two faces of Shakespeare, Entertain Yourself magazine. She's walking, crows and pigeons abound, back to the telephone, but she doesn't call. She is so weary, so despondent. but being observed by a hero of sorts.
Tom Strong.
Tom Strong. In all of his magnificence with a grappling hook.
Mr. Strong, hello, this is Karen Bruegel. Listen, we need to talk with you and find out if you've located Promethea yet. It's just that you said you'd get back to us. You feel shut up. Look, what it is, some people at the bureau here thought you'd maybe be reluctant turning in a former partner. If that's the case, I just wanted to underline the importance of finding Promethea. Mr. Strong, we believe she's planning to end the world. That includes your world, Millennium, and that island in the West Indies. Look, just get back to us, okay? Okay, bye.
Mr. Strong walks the halls. Pictures of friends and ancestors, relations, people he's worked with, garner the walls. He comes upon one picture and looks at it intently. It is his group, the group of superheroes that he once loved to be with. One of them is a Promethea.
Who's his wife?
Husband?
Hey, you're up late. Hello, my love. Yes, I'm afraid this Promethea thing is weighing on my mind. I just have a bad feeling about it all. It is all.
How do you mean, bad?
I don't know. I just feel there may be forces involved here that I don't understand. I feel I could make a wrong move, and I don't know. Cause some disaster, maybe. Do I sound crazy?
No, feeling something, too. Perhaps everyone does. Quinta Desolat, before she died, did something strange. She said, Dahlia, the fat lady, she's going to sing. Then she sang, she'll be coming round the mountain. And then she died. Scene change. Our lovers, in their mundane habitat, our heroine is getting dressed. Another day, another dollar. She walks to work. But little does she know she is being followed by an ebony-skinned girl, or woman, rather, of power, the Promethea, another version of such. She knows something's up. She's a little wary. What's going on? She runs. Running to her place of business, M City Movies. Oh,
fuck.
She's running again.
She saw Solomon in there. Yeah.
Yeah. She's running again, not knowing what to do. Running. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? She's climbing an escalator. Tom Strong?
I need to talk with you.
Hey, look, it's Tom Strong.
I need to talk with you.
Oh, God. Get out of my way. Tom?
Yes. That's me. Tesla Solomon, she's running. We're on level 50 of Laundry Streets, north side, and heading west.
Hey, look out. Hey. Jesus, excuse me? Whoa.
Give it up, Sophie, please. I'm Tom Strong. I'm trying to help.
Sophie. Our heroine is disrupting anything that's in her path. Running, pushing people, trying to get away, and then the ebony Promethea.
Oh, no, that's actually...
That's Tesla.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Tesla arrives. Go ahead.
Where are you?
Who's Tesla?
Who's Tesla?
You jumped off, you're jumping off the railing there.
Yeah, Tesla's jumping off the railing. Should I be Tesla? Okay, Joey.
Yeah.
Or Sophia, or whoever you are. That's it. Game over. And just cause my dad wouldn't hit a girl, don't you think I won't? I'm Tesla Strong. You're coming with me.
I'm the end of the world. Please get out of my way.
Huh? What the hell are you talking? Then we see a cup half empty or a cup half full. Oh! Chukoluteth.
Mr. Tesla, oh, crinkly. Oh, right, oh, Jill. It's me. That deuced pushy New Yorker must have got a lucky shot in. Hey, what? You know, I met Promethea once or twice myself back in the 50s. Rather a jolly sort. This young filly isn't her. So who is she?
Oh, God, Solomon. Oh, God. Our heroine is running into a darkened corridor.
Singing yippee yippee yay, yay. Singing yippee yippee yay, yay.
Going into an elevator. Down into the basement, where a security guard is looking at a porno magazine. But he takes no interest. She goes up into a darkened street. Crows greet her.
He's on the roof.
Okay. And he's on the roof.
That's you. Yeah, that's you.
Tom?
Is this now a time? Tom Strong is coming down. He's coming down on some sort of a lift. Looks like a backpack.
A rocket pack. Yeah,
a rocket pack. Like he's flying in. And that's the end of it.
Is it time, he says? And she looked up.
And she's looking up. When it blows, it stacks. Okay, that's it.
When worlds collide.
Yeah. You know, this Sophie had a different face and hair. Very
well.
Yeah, I got a little confused with everything. That's why I kept on saying our heroine.
Yes.
It was confusing. It was a drastic change from
You know, she looks more like Stacia.
That's who I thought she was.
Yeah, but it's not. It's Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
So Stacia is in prison, as we, you know, she's captured.
Right.
So we have a very conflicted Sophie.
Yes.
She's also been on the lam for 3 years.
Yeah.
I also think there may have been a hiatus in the production of the Prometheus story.
Right. I think Rachel mentioned that the
Yeah, there was a hiatus the first four books, and it ended with that last story that we had, the Judgment of Solomon story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Mhm.
And then, which may have had to do with negotiations with, you know, the people who own the rights to this thing, you know. He may have been fighting with his publishers at that time. There was a period of, maybe more than a year. That's one of the reasons.
Well, they summarize on the, I have the, not a deluxe edition, I have the graphic novel five. And when you open up the cover, on the inside of the cover, it says, Sophie Banks, can you see it? Do you have that on your edition?
Yep.
So it summarizes how, essentially, the story arc very, very succinctly and where they are right now. And it's ironic to me, the girl at the bottom, it says, the frightened girl has no choice but to release that mystic power known as Promethea, thereby unleashing an apocalypse on the world, etc. And before, they speak of, you know, Imateria as a mystic warrior woman, Promethea. And, oh, here it is, researching a fictional trail through the centuries.
Yeah.
Sophie used the power of story to take on the persona of Promethea. It's almost as if Alan Moore was Sophie taking on, I don't know, that's how I'm reading it. I may be reading too much into it.
I got confused with the Ebony Skin girls. There was the Ebony Skin Promethea that, and then the Ebony Skin Telsa come in.
Now, who was that Promethea? That's like a Promethea I don't know, even though which one she is.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I didn't know. That was a new one. There seems to be so many manifestations that we're dealing with.
A little bit of a disjunct in this issue.
I guess maybe I missed something. Where did you see the ebony-skinned Promethea? I don't
on the sofa. When he was smoking the pot.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. I thought that was Anna. Isn't that Anna? She speaks like Anna, the original Promethea. I mean, you know, she talks about, you know, she's speaking in that 1700s English.
Right.
I thought that was the original one.
You may be right, but physically...
Wasn't the original one black? She was a servant? I think... Wasn't she, like, in colonial times? She was, like a mulatto or a mulatto or, you know.
I don't remember. I don't think she was.
Or maybe she's just shown in shadow here. That could also...
I got this as the original ancient Promethea. That's what I thought.
Oh, you may be right about that.
I mean, she's Egyptian all the way back to the millennium, you know?
She has an eye on her cheek.
Like the very original, you know?
Yes.
But I do have to say, someone coming in, it could almost be taken as a separate book on a different series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, we really didn't
physically
see her any other than as a child in the earlier chapters. We only saw her as a child and heard her story. We didn't really see her. So, yeah, I think you're right, John. I think that's who it is.
Who is the person who's jumping off the railing?
Where?
That's Sophie.
That's Telsa.
Oh, no, that's Tesla.
No, Tesla.
That's Tom Strong's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I got confused with the ebony skin from
right.
I'm just flipping through the pages here. Boy, the last few pages is going to be a beaut to read. Yeah. My goodness, with all the psychedelics and everything.
And you guys have the poster at the back of your book?
The last pages, and also the pullout of the very
end. It's a pullout. Yeah, I have the pullout,
the
but still.
Gap of the entire story.
Oh, so, my God, you need a magnifying glass for this little
You know what I find very interesting?
All of the paths are numbered and brought in.
Oh, how cool. I just found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I had no idea it was in here.
Yep.
Well,
you know, I think it's very interesting, too. This glass of water, half full, half empty, is almost like a photograph rather than a drawing, which kind of is a hint of things to come, you know, if you read it further.
It's perfect with the reading. The cards are right on again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can't get over this. I even mentioned this. I spoke to Wall the other day about our sessions, and I said it's uncanny how accurate the cards are.
Yeah.
And I even told him my little ritual that I do, and I just find this so rewarding. You know, to enjoy reading something together and analyzing it in tarot terms.
And,
Paul.
Yes, absolutely. I get the feeling, the distinct feeling, and maybe it's just me, that there is a lot going on. I think there's a reason this particular group of people came together to do this at this time. I think there's something very significant in this for each and every one of us, individually as well as a group. For me, at least, I am getting... this was perfect timing.
Mm.
this was...
Well, you had a Promethea dream. I've had Promethea dreams.
Yeah. I mean, there is something trying to open up in my life, and this, as much fun as we have, I think there's a serious undertone to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is, there's messages trying to get through to me, and I kind of get the feeling maybe that's true for others of you, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have always found that things seem to guide you through. After a certain way, after a certain, when you have a certain quest or questions, that things sort of, there's forces. For instance, I was supposed to be doing a major tarot party for a group of women, but people get sick, and I said they're not meant to hear what I have, what has the cards have to say.
They're not ready for the.
They're not ready, and that's it. Whoever shows up, shows up. Whoever doesn't, I'm not going to sweat it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's often the case.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to Bayside?
I may still go to Bayside. Yes.
So you didn't have to go. You didn't go in the. We're told that it was a no-show.
It may still change. It may still change, and I'm luckily I don't sweat it. I am not the type of person that makes my makes it a priority that I do parties or it's my living or I have to worry about it. I have a very philosophical point of view when it comes to tarot.
Mm-hmm.
Very, you know, it's like. It's not a parlor game. I don't, not when I get to read the cards. It's not a parlor game, that's for sure. But, you know, many people like parlor games. Maybe a different reader, if they had this party, everyone would have been shown up and been okay and things like that.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I do events, parties and things, I'm doing a Halloween party this weekend. I can kind of make it more of a fun thing. I don't find that being irreverent at all. But yet, even during those kinds of quickie readings, you know, 5 minutes, three cards, throw them down on the table, having fun kind of readings, every once in a while, something very profound does come through. And I really believe, I think like you do, that if there is someone there who needs a particular message, it's going to come through for them, even in that rather frivolous environment.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to be open.
Right.
You know, I just need to be open and let it flow, you know, through me.
I was at a party. I was one of the readers at a party, a corporate party, and a woman came up to me, sat down, and she said, I just found out 2 weeks ago that my husband's leaving me for another woman.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I did the reading for her, and it was like much more than, and I spent a lot more time with her than I would have otherwise. But my point is, you don't know what the person, how open or how traumatic an event has hit them on. And then they happen to be at this corporate party, and there you are, and it's quite amazing.
Like everything has conspired to come together at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's so weird.
Okay, so shall we deal with the reading now?
Sure.
Yeah, let's deal with the reading.
I get the moon and the hermit very much in the way Sophie felt.
Yes.
Well,
Tom Strong certainly was an emperor of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And Six of Wands. I could see him, you know, as the victorious hero, you know, in a Six of Wands.
Yeah. Well, the authority figure that they go to get a grip on this apocalyptic Promethea.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether the Seven of Pence and the Seven of Swords, which are such dire cards in this reading, reflect the feeling of Sophie herself along with indolence, or whether it's actually headed towards some sort of apocalyptic event.
Well, I would tend to read it both ways, actually.
Right,
I think, well, since she is the one who is supposedly going to bring about the apocalypse, aren't they kind of one and the same? You know, I mean...
Well, the other thing is that as I do see it as it's a... incubation period, that she's in an incubation period, and we're seeing her in that, you know, so she's disguised, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting that she gave herself a boy's name.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it is.
You know. And, you know, she's with a sort of, you know.
Slacker.
Yeah.
No, to put it mildly, he is seems like a slacker to me.
Go anywhere. Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think she... I think she leaves him when she finally hooks up with Promethea again.
By the way, I don't think...
power.
In my little spiel on the phone, I don't think that was Sophie speaking. I think it was one of the Prometheas.
Which...
When she's going, it's quite at the beginning, just before she goes into the bookstore for DVD store for the second customer, and it's like
she's calling her mother.
Yeah, she's calling her mother.
Fresh.
She's calling her mother and hanging up. That was their signal from the last.
And book. Obviously, there's no cell phones. That was interesting. No,
that is interesting.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I thought about that.
Not ubiquitous in 2003.
Well, that's all right. They would have been able to track her through her cell phone anyway. So, you know, just
they're tracking her through the internet, ironically.
Yeah. Yeah, but they can't pinpoint her exact geographic location. They only take it with a cell phone, so...
Yeah, they just know she's in the town. So they don't know where she is.
Yeah.
Of course,
if you use Paul Hughes Barlow counting method, this comes out to be very interesting reading, I think. Have you ever used that counting method?
Which counting method?
Paul Hughes Barlow counting method?
No,
I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead and explain it. Explain how you're
using it. So if you take you start with the first card, which is the Six of Wands. That's one of the minor arcana cards, and they count face value. And then you count from that particular position. So that's the start of your reading. So you're starting with six, so that's one. Starting at six, you count one, two, three, four, five, six, and it takes you to the moon. And it says the issue of the spread, part of the issue of the spread is going to be this moon energy. And either side of that moon card is the Princess of Wands and the Four of Wands, which I think is very interesting because the thing is that things are not clear to her. The moon is unclear. It's in the shadow. And the beginning of that chapter was in the shadows.
Very much.
No, that could be
the moon is an ideal place for incubation.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Sort of what it means, you know.
And on the right side, going forward, is the Four of Wands, which is completion or power. She's going to find her power by dealing with her issues, I think. Mm-hmm. And the Princess of Wands, is, to me, it's about, that's the Page of Wands. And that's about new energy that's coming in, and new energy that's going to be very powerful in the sense of new starts, the spark of life. So things are beginning to change for her. Okay, then you start from the...
Yeah.
Then you go from the moon card, which is a planetary major. In other words, each of the majors have planets attached to them. Some of them do, all right?
Wow.
So you start with this one and you count, I think you count, hold on for a minute. I think with the moon card you count 12, all right? And you start from there and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And that takes you to the Seven of Swords, which is about futility.
Oh, wait a minute. How did you count that? You start from the moon and count...
Moon, and that's the planetary position. It's called a planetary major.
So
and they all have.
Would be number one?
No, you start from the moon. The moon, well, that would be
moon
number one.
So, okay.
That would be number one.
Number seven.
And then you count
six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11, 12. Yeah, if you tell
me. Now, wait a minute. I'm still lost. Moon is number one. Where do you go to next? Position
you go to number two and four of wands. You just start counting from the moon.
Two, three, four. And once you get to nine, where do you go?
Go back
to one.
10, 11, 12, 13. Oh, went too far. Yeah. Now, wait a minute.
So you start from the moon, you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It takes you to the Seven of Swords.
Oh, yes. Okay. I just miscounted. Okay. I don't know how to count.
So that's another important part for her reading.
Yeah.
You know, for this reading. The Seven of Swords is dealing with many tongues, and we certainly have many people in this chapter coming up with all sorts of information. And she's dealing with her powers, and then you say, okay, I'd have to think about this, because you have the Emperor here. What is that going to, how is that going to work for us?
How do you see the, how would...
That would be four.
How would Jews do it?
No, I'm looking at this Seven of Swords as being the central card.
Yeah. Now the Seven of Swords is the central card. Okay.
That's right.
So you have the four of wands. Yeah, okay.
A number four Emperor, a number four Wands, mm-hmm. completion. Mm-hmm. Emperors are structured, boundaries.
So something's going to be completed for her. And she's feeling all this imprint from everybody else. She's feeling all these unsettled energy, many tongues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'll start at Seven of Wands, Seven of Swords. That's another minor card, so we count seven from that one. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. It takes you to the Princess of Wands.
Now, when you had a Six of Wands, you also, when you have the moon, you count it, planetary, okay. So majors are planetary, okay.
Are all, now, I mean, where can I find information on this method?
It's in his book called The Beyond the Celtic Cross by Paul Hughes Barlow.
Okay.
I think it's a wonderful book. I've used it for readings to my clients, and I tell you, it's amazing. The Celtic Cross.
I agree. His stuff is actually quite good.
I like that book.
Both of his books.
That method sounds like Golden Dawn. Is that the same thing?
It is Golden Dawn. He's quite traditional in his stuff. He's very much uses the Toff deck as a deck he uses, and he's very much into the basic traditions of that stuff.
It's on page 25 of the book, and it's an amazing process, and I'm working with clients that takes them to depth I couldn't even imagine.
Oh, really?
Mary Beth, you might find something about that on his site, supertarot.co, I think.
What is it?
Yeah. He may have something on there about the method.
Site name again?
Supertarot. I think it's CO.
Okay.
It's a British thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, just look him up.
Yeah.
Look up Paul Hughes -
Barlow.
Hughes
- Barlow.
B-A-R-L-O-W. L-O-W. And if you Google him, he's got two websites that he does. One is Super Tarot, and then he's got another one that isn't as developed yet.
So if you got the Emperor next, how would you do the Emperor?
The Emperor is the Emperor? Is that a major? Is that that's a zodiacal
that's
card?
Aries.
That's Aries, so that counts 12.
Oh, any planet or any planetary sign type thing is a
no, planet. No. The zodiacal major, like the Emperor or the Lovers or the Hermit, those are zodiacal. The planetary cards, like the Magician or the High Priestess, the High Priestess is the Moon, and the Magician is Mercury. Those are planetary, and they count nine.
So we should have done nine for the moon then.
No.
Instead of 12.
No, the moon. The moon is a planet.
Okay. Oh, it's part of the zodiac. You're saying.
The zodiacal card, though.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a very interesting method, and I would suggest you try it out, because, I mean, it does take the reading to depth that you won't even... It's amazing.
No, thank you. Yeah.
That is very, very, very good. So each card becomes a central card sooner or later.
He also does some other types of readings that are not. This is a slightly different way of approaching the analysis, but it's another system he suggests in his.
Beyond the
Celtic course is highly recommended by Corinne Kenner.
Ah, okay.
And she's very big on the Celtic course.
The other thing he suggests in terms of analysis is to go first and last card.
Yes, he does. And also he talks about friendships and he talks about elemental dignities and all that. But deal with the counting first, Paul. It'll take you as far as you need to go for a while. And then I think you can take it deeper if you want to go with that.
Well, it's not necessarily deeper. It's just other ways to approach the readings. Like one of the ways that I read this spread is I read the 5 and the 6 and the 7. As sort of central pillar.
Oh, now that's interesting. How is that?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Because I have 8 at the top, not 7.
Well, 8 is what I mean at the top.
Okay. I thought you had a crooked central pillar.
No, I was just looking at the card rather than that. So it's 8, 6, and 5 are the
Celtic ones. Cross never made sense to me. It seemed like such a shallow kind of reading. And now I see it in a whole new way.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you so much, David.
You're welcome. Get the book, Cynthia. It's an amazing book.
I have the book. I haven't gotten to it yet. I just got it.
You have to work with it.
Synchronicity.
Yeah, you have to work with it, though, I think, because it's a talk book.
Yeah.
It's a talk book. He's going back and forth with a client, and it's like doing a reading, and she's doing it. Get into that mood, into that pattern with it. But it's I think it's a very amazing book.
Now, were you able to easily understand this the way you told us how to read this?
Yes.
You had to glean it from the pattern of his own style.
The pattern of his own style, but it's very clear.
Okay.
Very clear. And two of his other ones. They're relatively short, but they're also quite clear in terms of what he's doing.
Okay.
And basically, he's not doing anything that isn't traditional.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they may seem like they're innovations, and the probable reason they seem like innovations is most tarot readers don't read with that breadth of... or depth.
Yeah, he's big on this opening of the key, and that's where that method, I believe, comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The opening of the key spread.
That's right.
And that's described.
Oh, you don't have to great depth to the reading. Anybody, you can sit down and read a very short reading and take it to a depth right there. You know, I think you do that thing with Walt's three-card readings, just taking the central card anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and talking about the commentary cards on either side of the central card. That's all he's doing.
What I've been doing lately is I've been using a nine-card spread, but not following exactly this kind of layout that we have here. The one I use is just 3-3-3. You know,
that's kind of like Robert Place.
Yeah, that's a good reading.
Yeah, it's sort of like Robert Place, except I look at it as a mandala, you know, so you have the card, and then you have the cards around it, and I don't give the places particular names or values, but I will line them up, and of course, if you use this counting method, this brings in other relationships in that mandala that would be different than the ones you would see just from the surface spread that I've got.
Does he call number one, for instance, on what do they call it in the Celtic cross?
Significator.
Yes.
You know, Cynthia, what you can do is you take the Celtic cross and lay it out 1 through 10 in a line. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The 1 through 10, and the first card becomes a significator.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can use the last card for the significator if you want. Or you can take it, you can say to the client, what card speaks to you?
Right.
And she might pick, or he might pick a card in the middle of that line, and that's the one I would start with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming from there. eventually you get back to one of the cards again. You get back to one of the cards in your reading, and then that's when I stop.
Are you talking about friendships? Are you talking about outcomes? Are you talking, in other words, does the Celtic Cross placement, or how would you call it, Johanna? In other words, the fixed meanings of the places, of the number one means this, number two means
layout, that. The layout?
Yeah.
You
know, naming it. Or do you leave it open, does you leave it open-ended, or have you found it that you name it, or you leave it open-ended?
He starts with the Celtic Cross, and he has the positions, right?
Okay.
And he does a reading with the Celtic Cross. Then once he's done a reading with the Celtic Cross, he lays them out in a line, linearly, and reads then he counts the cards at that point.
Okay, but does number one remain the significator, number two?
Yeah, it can in your mind if you're doing the reading for that. You can use that.
Is that the way you do it?
I've done back and forth that way, right.
Mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This card is your hopes and fears, and we're dealing with hopes and fears here.
Oh, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Corinne Kenner in her Tarot for Writers gives a lot of ideas for Celtic Cross writerly spreads. And this would be very interesting taking it from that point of view. It wouldn't have to be a toss deck just because Paul...
No. He uses a Rider-Waite deck.
Oh, he does use a Rider-Waite.
Yes.
Oh, I thought he did a talk with the toss.
No, I was saying talk, T-A-L-K. He's talking back and forth.
I apologize.
Like a conversation.
I have to go get the book.
The other book he's got.
That was excellent.
Specifically with the Toth deck.
Right. It's interesting how, I found his site years ago to be very, very helpful. I haven't been that way again. And, you know, I've been hesitant to go to the book because I'm not a Celtic Cross type person. I don't do that kind of reading. I tend to work with threes more than I do with tens or elevens or twelves.
Well, I think the thing that I respect Paul Usbarrow for is that he is, in some ways, a consummate professional tarot reader. He really respects the tradition and deals with it in great depth. And he's quite consistent with that. And I think that I really respect his approach to reading and cards and layouts and stuff.
I've corresponded with him several times. He's a very nice individual, too.
Yes, he is.
We should get him over to Reader's Studio.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
That would be wonderful if you can.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's...
You know, actually, he's got a girlfriend in Florida.
Oh.
That's what he was telling me. I've been in Reader's.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I don't know why I know he's got a girlfriend Actually, I was thinking I was bugging him about coming to Reader's Studio.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like...
The lady he co-wrote the book with, Catherine Chapman, I think she's coming to the Reader's Studio.
Okay.
That would be great.
Yeah, she's able to sell her house finally. Now she has the money.
Where does she live?
She's in England.
She is in England.
Uh-huh.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be really good. Well, I think there's definite reaching across the pond with this tarot professional initiative, and he's part of that group as well as
the Katz group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marcus Katz's group. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They're all reasonably. There's several other people too that are pretty interesting. If you Google Tarot Lexicon, there's a guy who has a website also from England, and it's a pretty good website, blog, and his own version of a lexicon. It's just part of his thing. It isn't a real lexicon. But one of the things he brought up was the thing about no longer doing spreads. You know, in other words, basically finding that spreads actually get in the way of reading the cards sometimes.
I find that's true. Sometimes I get hit psychically, intuitively, you know, immediately by the cards. And it's not according to the position.
Yeah.
And it's a more accurate reading than if I had stayed with,
I also do that a lot. It depends on my mood for the day, but I'm not one to be a real stickler for saying, well, we're going to do 10 cards, and this is what they're going to mean, and this is what that card's going to mean. I don't do a lot of that. I do that once in a while, but for the most part, I just say, well, here are the cards, and put them down, you know, and then we just sort of see how they, see what the flow is, you know. And even if I lay them out as a boss, I'm still pretty much just doing it, you know, just by what the cards are, rather than insisting that that the place has makes a lot of is important.
So I was wondering about your process. Do you find that the spread and the layout and the meaning of the number of the cards, you know, like in the Celtic cross, using that as an example, do you find that inhibits you, or do you find it frees you?
I'm sorry, were you talking to me?
To David.
Oh, okay, I couldn't hear who you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I don't use the Celtic cross. I'll just throw 10 cards. You know, just throw the cards out of the deck. Or I'll fan the cards out, and I'll say to the client, well, why don't you pull 10 or 12 cards here for me?
Mm-hmm.
And this, pull the cards, and then I'll lay them out in a line and read them. Or just turn them over one after the other and just read them as they pop up. And I think that's very effective, and I think that they feel that they've pulled the cards themselves, and the cards have more meaning to them that way.
Actually, I had a discussion with someone last week about that. Anna Cook, she was on a show, and she refused to read any cards for a call-in person. The person, of course, didn't have their own deck, so she said, well, I won't read the cards because they didn't pull the cards.
Mm.
You know, so I was a little challenged. I did challenge her on that, saying, look, you know, I've done it a dozen different ways. I've pulled the cards for clients. I've had them pull the cards. And it doesn't seem to make much bit of a difference.
Never let the client touch the cards, right?
Never. I mean, okay, no, I won't say never. Sometimes the spirit moves me, and I let it. I come to the, to get the truth, I do the cutting. Okay? Because many times I feel that the client has too much of wish. Wish, you know? You know, I love him so much. What? You know, and I'm sorry, you know? That type of thing. He, you know, some of the clientele, most of the clientele are pretty stubborn people. They're not there for spiritual advice. They want to know, is he going to leave his wife and marry me? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I hate to say this. You know, we take the high road, but they take the low road.
Yeah.
And
and there the twain shall meet. No, wait, that's another quote.
Yeah.
I haven't had too many like that, but I have at the Reader's Studio. I was a little, you know, I'm used to you, Johanna. Always, I don't feel. Do you feel like even if the client or if the person touches your deck, it's a bad thing?
Not all the time. Many times I'll do, if I'm doing a one-to-one reading.
Mm-hmm.
I'll first do some of it.
No, I'm just saying if they go to touch your deck, does that upset you?
Not too much. I clear it. I know how to clear my deck.
Because at the
I use my own deck for my own personal readings that I don't let anybody touch, but when I'm working with clients, I have a deck that they can touch.
So you keep one just for yourself.
Right.
When I was at the reader's studio at that time, two people got very upset that I touched their deck. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, why come to the reader's studio? Because they didn't
Why bring a deck to the reader's studio?
Yeah,
you don't want other people to...
Right. That was my sense of that particular... And I do feel also like Jana, I know how to clear a deck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I have...
Oh, okay, let's share how we clear decks. Maybe we should do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
don't...
Sludge mine.
Yeah, I love to mix it up all the way, reversed cards and everything, and then I just turn them to upright. You know, that type of thing. And then do a little Reiki over them, like Wald and Ruthann do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah,
that's
I don't have
one.
Anything real elaborate either. I just, I shuffle. If I'm clearing a deck, I like to put it in order first. And then I shuffle it 10 times and smudge it with some sage smoke.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I don't do 10 times. I do 4 times for 4 whirls.
Mm-hmm.
I go from there.
Well,
a real simple one. Particularly when you're in a setting like a party or a reader studio between clients, is to put the deck down and with your hand of choice, tap on the card a number that like knock on the cards, almost like you were knocking on the door, whatever number is meaningful to you, 3, 7, whatever. And I use that. I just.
I also put them in order. In other words, I put them all in order, and then since I'm so lousy at shuffling, yeah, I did have a dream the other day in which I was shuffling the cards the way you're supposed to shuffle cards. What happened is, as I shuffled them, they all became birds and flew away. I happened a week or so before I came up with my lexicon idea, but I can see this lexicon thing being a bunch of birds flying all over the place.
Yep.
Yeah.
There they go.
If you invite some people who you would like, that makes you kind of the boy. I don't think it can work without having somebody at the helm.
I agree. However, as a community situation, the helm is going to change positions occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
What I think I'm going to do is relatively simple from some suggestions that I got from a couple of people. I may set up a very simple, a beginning lexicon, which will be more a list of words that are relevant to Tarot, because we're only interested in Tarot. Like, you know, we have a regular word like spread. We don't have to put down, you know, something you put on bread. You know, we don't need to use, we don't have to we only need to use a as it may be relevant to Tarot users. So anybody's going to be able to put in definitions. I'm going to ask people not to remove definitions because we're going to deal with descriptions. And I'm also ask people that if they can to cite a use of the term in that way in a tarot from a tarot book and cite it as such.
It would be interesting, Johanna, to give the meanings from the thesaurus, Roger's thesaurus.
Yeah.
Well, actually, a project I have with the thesaurus is to show how the thesaurus can be rearranged to fit with the 25 tattvas.
Mm.
And so basically, what you have is you have, through both of these things, a sort of dictionary or synonyms for experience terms.
Mm.
And, this is the way we experience the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I mean, from the most of the things I've gotten back is that you know, there's been a lot of work done, and so part of it would be to acknowledge and consolidate the work that has been done, which doesn't need to be done by just one person. But you know, it's for the convenience and open for anybody to. But it's a community resource. I mean, that's the idea of it. That you have one place to go where you can look up specific uses of Taro terms and how they fit. I'm a little less interested in having all the 78 cards glossed and their various meanings and associated, which most Taro glossaries do to some degree. In other words, or the Taro dictionary has, you know, or you have all the symbols done. But in the long term, we could move in that direction to where you have, you know, so that you could also, so part of the glossary would be the name of every Taro deck and who created it and when, and when it was published, you know. And there's considering how many hundreds of thousands of Taro decks, that'll be an ongoing process all in itself.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, bye. I'm looking up indolence in my thesaurus here.
Uh-huh.
Now, pertaining to the card, the Eight of Cups, what would you say would be the one definition? Inaction, inertia, laziness, slowness, vegetation for our reading of this chapter?
Obviously vegetation. They were smoking so much weed.
I thought of inertia, tell you the truth.
Inertia?
Okay, 268. Okay. Just want to see if we can get some insights here.
All right.
268.
So you looked up indolence first.
Right.
Then you picked one of the meanings.
Yeah, and we picked inertia as one of the meanings.
And now you're going to look up inertia.
Right.
Okay.
Well, but you're looking up the inertia through the number.
Through the number.
Yeah.
268.4. Dormancy. Mm-hmm. Passiveness, passivity, suspense, abeyance, latency.
Yeah.
Torpor. I don't know what that is. T-O-R.
Torpor. Yeah. Torpor is drugged.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Apathy. Yeah. Indifference.
Some people use torpor in relation to a very hot, humid day. You know.
Okay.
Torpor. Yeah.
Lotus eating. Languor. Stagnation. Stagnancy. And then we go into stasis. Deathliness. Deadliness. Catalepsy, catatonia.
See, all of those actually apply.
Entropy.
We're in this dull point. You know,
it's dormant. I love the word dormancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, that was
okay. Now, on either side, you have.
You mean up or down?
Up or down. Mm-hmm. We go to either. The word before is 267, motion. Number four is rate, gait, pace. Tread, step, stride, clip or lick. Travel, progress, career. Then afterwards, we go to swiftness. And acceleration, quickening, pickup. Getaways.
That's 269?
That would be 269. Okay. Under swiftness, number four, it's acceleration, quickening, pickup, getaway.
I would always thank you, everybody.
Like almost
hi.
Wait,
what
do you
need to do?
Hey, Beth. Has left the conference.
Oh, she's got her people there. Acceleration, quickening, pickup, getaway, step up, speed up, thrust, drive, mm-hmm. impetus.
So that would almost be like the counter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go any further than that.
Yeah, well, I can't. I'm not going to the rules of the system.
Right.
But
But you actually, I wouldn't be surprised if this quickening card that you just read is going to be the thing that's going to come up in the next episode or two, next chapter or two.
Mm-hmm.
In Promethea. So we've managed had a quite interesting discussion today about the meaning of cards and stuff. I don't know if, we will
also, I wanted to point out that in this reading, you have to, in the spread rather, I like to read the two, the one and the four together, and the two and the three together, like the spiritual aspect is the two and the three, the communication between the heart and the mind, which can be in conflict.
And the one and the four are Alpha and Omega?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so whatever.
How do you feel about like, facade.com or tarot.com, any of those computerized, I don't know how else to put it, kinds of readings? Do you ever turn to those?
On a whim?
Right.
To me, it's very hard. I mean, you have a glossary of terms, right? Which term are you is the intuition? Which term can a computer pick out without?
Well, as a reader, you
yeah. Right, exactly. It can filter as the one that makes sense to you.
Well, I was just saying for yourself, like to keep, like what you say, the high road, to stick to the high road when reading for yourself.
Oh, when reading to myself, for myself? Right. I usually have someone else read for me. You know, I have someone who, if I wanted... I get very confused with computerized readings.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter what, I put my own slant to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really do. You know, if I get the lightning struck tower, I'm going, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten the lightning struck tower and it's happened to me. And I'm not the type to read for myself all the time. I really don't. I cannot bear the idea of knowing what the day is going to bring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. Because I don't want to give myself the kibosh. I'm too sensitive that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, let me not go out of the house. Lightning struck tower today.
Having done the creativity coaching and continuing to do it, I have two clients that I'm working with, and I do find, I can say... with these two, I can say, do you want me to use the cards? And if they do, I find reading in that spirit for a creative project,
mm-hmm.
What might the next step be, or a specific character, et cetera, that they're working with, or their next musical thing, whatever it should
mm-hmm.
be.
Well, if you
find that the tarot is very helpful
right.
that way.
For instance, you could say if they pull the lightning struck tower, they need to restructure something within either the work that they're doing.
That would be one thing, but I definitely also feel it's an aha card.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be a real big aha card,
right.
positively
right.
or negatively.
It depends on what's around.
Yeah.
What's
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
that's my epiphany card.
Yeah, I find it's an epiphany card also.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, depending on what's around it.
Right.
Right. So, it takes a certain amount of practice and intuition to know what that particular card is. But I do notice, Johanna, that you take it more as a very negative kind of card.
Yeah, I do. I take it as my experience with it.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the tower.
Yeah, and the lightning struck tower.
Yeah, well, you know, actually I had a friend of mine who was planning on building her house, and the first card that came up for her was the Tower.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I read it for her in a saying that, well, it just means you're planning on building a house, you know. I read it to her value neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because... yeah, well, I knew her well enough, you know, and trying to discourage her, saying, well, you're going to have a lot of trouble getting your house built. It wasn't...
Well, did she?
Well, she's still in process. So far, she hasn't had any trouble, so mm-hmm. she's going along pretty smoothly. But she's still got a lot of other things to do. But she's lining people up and getting them to do stuff. You know, that she hasn't run into any critical delays.
Mm-hmm.
She's still going along pretty well.
Building a house, the tension of building the house, I will tell you, you'll learn a lot about your own ego and personality. Trust
Very
me.
True. Very true.
Trust anyone. You know, it has a lot to do with self and how self is perceived.
This is her retirement house. I mean, she's... Well, she's 72, I think, now, and she's planning on moving into this place and out in the country, and this is going to be where she lives until she dies.
So.
She isn't planning on dying for another 30 years.
You know, I don't know, you know, a retirement house, no boy.
I know. Yeah.
Well, yeah. We all think we're going to have all our functions intact, right?
Right.
We're never going to need help going up the stairs or.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well. She knows that. She's not. She's building them. She can only afford a one level house anyway.
Okay.
In fact, her house is going to be so small. If you want to go visit her, you're going to have to sit on the porch.
Yeah.
I said, oh, maybe you should become a, what's the word? Anchorite. An anchorite.
Well, I remember.
Were people who were walled in. Those are people who were walled up into rooms. And
oh, goodness. I remember one guy said, it came from, in the South, many of the slaves negotiated inherited land that they were, you know, due to the abolition of slavery, and they sat on a lot of very wonderful land. In fact, some of them sold the property for development when there was a development boom 10 years or so, 10, 15 years ago. And this guy tells me a story about he had this elderly aunt, and you couldn't even go to her front door. It was so overgrown. So he bought her two goats, right? He goes back to the property. The goats were going in absolutely, it was pristine. They ate everything in sight, the goats. Everything in sight. That his aunt says, I don't know what to feed these goats anymore. She says, they're ravenous. And it was a very funny story. The way he told it is that they went and they were going into other people's property, and they were just like eating machines. They cleared all the brush away and everything.
Oh, goats are notorious for that, that's for sure.
And the way he tells the story, his aunt was going crazy trying to scavenge food for them, not to go into the neighbors' properties and eat their rose bushes and things like that. Even though she had a huge acreage, she wound up either selling them or I don't know, for slaughter, or there were two options: selling them to slaughter, or actually starting a business for other people who have heavy brush that they want cleared naturally without heavy equipment. Rent a goat type of situation. Okay, my little take on goats. That's the one card, the devil card, which has a goat in it in the Toth deck that I don't get.
You don't understand
that? It's a Capricorn.
I know, but it's the devil card.
I'm quite sympathetic to the devil card.
I like goats. You got it. I feel that they serve a purpose. Goat milk, you know what I'm saying?
And I'm quite comfortable with the understanding of eating everything in sight.
Okay, well, whatever. Okay, so that's it for today, right?
That's it for today.
We'll see you next week.
Hopefully I'll be here, but if I'm not, I'll definitely give you a call before time.
Yeah, and I will set up for recording if you're not here.
Right, exactly.
All right.
What's happening next week? Your surgery?
No, well, it's happening on Thursday, but I have to be at my mother's house to let some repairmen in.
Oh,
the appointment is in the morning. But it says 8 to 9, so hopefully I'll be back.
Right. So enjoy your Halloween.
Yes, everyone, please do enjoy.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it's this weekend.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm gonna be reading cards and having a an astral entity charade.
Okay.
I'm gonna bring an astral entity with me and have people guess what it is.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Take care. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.